Good morning and welcome to the East Tennessee Report, a public affairs program of the Journal Broadcast Group. My name is Frank Murphy. This morning, we are delighted and honored to have Knoxville Police Chief David Rausch in the house with us. Good morning, Chief.
Good morning. Thanks, Frank.
Happy to have you. And here to talk about Knoxville, about police, and about the Law Enforcement Memorial Run, which is coming up May 12th. But we have opportunities to get folks registered before the run happens.
Absolutely. You can still get signed up. The easiest way is to go online at www.knoxlemr.com, which stands for Law Enforcement Memorial Run. The registration fee is $25. You can sign up as a runner, a walker, or a supporter. Mm-hmm. So we're asking for all of the above.
Now, as the guy who stands there handing out the fresh fruit, what does that make me? As they run by, I'm like, here.
That's a wonderful supporter.
Take a banana.
That's it. Get something to drink, have something to eat.
All right.
Yeah, good.
That's my job.
The race is going to be May 12th. That's Saturday morning down on Volunteer Landing is where we'll start off everything, 8 a.m. And so that's when we'll get everything kicked off. Hopefully, we'll have a wonderful, beautiful day. We mm-hmm. usually do in this wonderful time of the year in May in East Tennessee. And so we're looking for a large turnout. The proceeds are what's important is where the money goes.
Yeah.
And this is the one of those events that you know the money goes to something really good. And
mm-hmm.
the money goes to help us. We're building a fund to build a memorial here in Knoxville for law enforcement.
And these are fallen officers, and we want to remember them forever because they've given the ultimate sacrifice
absolutely.
To their community.
They've served well in this community, and we want to be able to remember them for in perpetuity.
Absolutely.
You know? And so, it's important that we remember those who don this uniform every day, go out here in this community every day and serve, for the desire to make sure that we have a safe community. And we really do. We have a great community here in Knoxville.
Absolutely. Now, Chief Rausch, this will be my first opportunity to attend the Law Enforcement Memorial Run. Not only will I be handing out the snacks, like I mentioned, but
right.
also at the end I get to announce the winners.
Right.
So tell me, what can I expect? What can everyone expect who's coming to the event for the first time? Maybe describe what it was like last year.
And oh,
also, I want to know what kind of feeling you got as a lifelong policeman. To see the support from the community,
it is amazing. You know, one is we have a great crowd show up, and what you'll see is law enforcement vehicles from every agency that's represented in this area. We'll have the entire region. You'll have vehicles from not only from Knoxville, from the city, but the county. But you also see vehicles from the TVA, the Tennessee Valley Authority.
Yeah.
You'll see Blount County. You'll see Maryville. You'll see Loudoun County. You'll see all of the law enforcement agencies in this region will be represented, and you'll see a vehicle from each of those, and they lead up to the starting line. At the starting line, we'll have a KFD. The fire department's there. They support us. They'll have a ladder truck there with a flag hanging above mm-hmm. the start line, which is a great way to start the race as we honor our country before we start the race.
And so
it's very patriotic. There'll be there'll be music playing,
mm-hmm.
all of it very, very intentional to get you fired up, make you understand that this is a great country we live in, this is a great community that we live in.
Now, I know that a lot of the law enforcement personnel in the area, like from FBI and from KPD and these other agencies that you mentioned, like to participate, too,
right.
to the officers who are not on duty.
Oh,
chances
there'll
are
be a large. Yeah, we actually have a little bit of a competition that goes on between all the agencies. And I apologize. I failed to mention the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The FBI is a huge partner in this.
They're the ones who dragged me into it.
they are a key player in this race and the work that's done there. Of course, Stacy
Bohannon
does
She's
an amazing job.
Public affairs specialist for the FBI Knoxville field office. Yeah,
right. And she does a great job in coordinating and helping us make this happen. And so the FBI is a great player. So what we do is we have you'll see a lot of law enforcement officers from various agencies, everything mm-hmm. from state, local, federal, THP, the Highway Patrol have folks there. There'll be folks from all agencies. And they'll all be there to run as well. So there'll be some competition going on between the officers and some fun ribbing and back and forth and all for the great cause.
That is fun. All right. So coming up May 12th, and you can register online at Knox.
Register online, knoxlemr.com.
Yeah, we call it Knox Lemur, but it's right. Law Enforcement Memorial Run. So,
absolutely.
And it's easily Googleable, which is also terrific because you've had that website domain for a couple of years now. It comes up.
Yeah.
Quickly in the search results, and we're also I know that the radio group is using social media to get the message
out. As we do at the city,
so
another place you can go to our website as well, or at the city of Knoxville, and you can look it up and under the police department.
And I saw a pretty good video PSA that you're in, along with several other of the leaders of law enforcement, like those groups that you mentioned.
Absolutely,
going one after one after one, talking about what it means to you. And tell me about that now, that emotional feeling you must have gotten over the course of the past few law enforcement memorial runs, knowing that we're honoring your fallen brothers.
Yeah, it's very special. This profession is a calling. And, when folks get involved in it, we know what we're getting into. We know that every day that we go out here to serve this community, we know that it may be our last. And that's something that is very real to us, something that we live with every day. But the reality is we continue to put this uniform on and we continue to go out and serve, with that knowledge in our mind. But the hope is that we don't lose our lives, but that we protect someone else's, mm-hmm. that we keep someone else from losing their life. And so, to be able to see the support, and we get great support in East Tennessee for law enforcement. It's absolutely amazing. I am humbled every day. At the support that we get in this, in not only my department, but all law enforcement in this region. We really do. East Tennessee is the greatest place to live. And I tell folks all the time, I go off to training and I'll have conversations with officers from other areas, and they can't believe the level of support that we mm-hmm. have in this area. This is special. This is a special place. I tell people that all the time. It makes you really feel good that we've got a community that supports law enforcement.
Well, let's talk a little about your background. We're talking with Knoxville Police Chief David Rausch, who came to Knoxville from Louisville years ago to just as a boot.
Right. Yeah.
You were like you are one of the I don't know this, but a police chief who worked your way up from officer and all the way through the ranks. You've been everything in this department. Is that common or uncommon in the chiefdoms of law enforcement?
It's not necessarily totally uncommon, but it's more and more it's less common.
Okay,
because
your predecessor had a lot of law enforcement experience, but he came from a completely different world. He was an FBI
Bureau of Investigation, and you see a lot of that. You'll see chiefs come from federal. A lot of cities will choose. Chiefs who have federal backgrounds, and there's different reasons for a lot of that, but you're right. I came here in 1993, fresh, looking for a job, looking to get into law enforcement, and this was the place that called and gave me the break, and it was a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun. I've worked my way up. I remember day one at the academy coming in, and they always ask you, what's your goal, and I had a goal. And mm-hmm. and I told him I wanted to be chief. Now,
good.
We paid for that.
Extra laps.
Lots of push-ups. But it has been my goal. And it's interesting because every time I would go to a promotional interview, and that question would always come up. What is your goal?
Mm-hmm.
And my goal had always stayed the same.
Good.
I want to be chief. And, so I kept working toward that, kept focused on that. But more than anything, it was really an opportunity for me to, experience this community and experience mm-hmm. this job in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, you
roles.
Are uniquely qualified. I mean, you've driven, a beat in pretty much every part of town.
I've worked every part of this city. I've worked, and majority of my tenure has been in patrol. I've spent, folks always comment that I'm in uniform a lot. Well, that's what I'm used to. This is my suit that I've worn all my career. And so, I do wear the uniform because I'm proud of it, and so I've all about a year of my career has been spent in patrol, and that 1 year was spent in training, teaching new officers how to do this job. So,
well, you talk about Knoxville being a wonderful place to live, and about and the support you get from the community for law enforcement. Well, let's talk about how law enforcement, in effect, supports this community. This is an unusual place in the country. because you have here in Knoxville, of course, you've got the University of Tennessee with its specialties in forensics. And you've got something in Oak Ridge that was created partly by KPD,
right,
called the National Forensic Academy. A couple of predecessors ago, you know, a couple of chiefs back, they got involved and said, you know what, we got this thing right here. We got the body farm. Nobody else has that.
Right.
Why don't we take advantage? And you've got police officers from all around the country, all around the world, who come here to your turf to learn.
Right. Worldwide, we are known, the National Forensics Academy, over in Oak Ridge. You know, started out here in Knoxville, but through some partnerships with the University of Tennessee and Oak Ridge, the labs, great partnership with UT Patel.
Yeah, and the checkbook of Patricia Cornwell. Don't forget
absolutely
her.
Patricia Cornwell, huge advocate, and she's been great for the whole forensics profession. And so, but it has been. It's great. Dr. Bass, of course, at the University of Tennessee, is the man when it comes to forensics. And
so what was it like for you in 1993 coming to town and starting to realize, wait a minute, I'm in someplace special when it comes to investigation?
It was huge. You know, we in our academy, every one of our officers get to go through the body farm. And there's a reason for that. We send them through so that they can experience what death is. Because, you know, we don't know if our officers have ever seen death. And so we don't want it to be a shock the first time they show up on a scene. So so they go and they're able to experience what death is. But there's more to it than that. You are able to see the science that goes into studying how death occurs and what happens, you know, on a lot of these different types of situations. And that center, the Anthropologic Center there, is a great location for training. And it really, what's amazing with it is for us is it, our officers benefit from all that.
Sure.
And we benefit greatly. And so, you know, it puts our agency so much more ahead of the curve when it comes to investigations.
All right. So when you go to the nationwide meeting, the coffee klatch of police chiefs, you can probably walk in with a little swagger because you're from Knoxville, Tennessee.
Absolutely. And we're well known. I mean, you know, I this past year I went to the International Association of Chiefs of Police conference up in Chicago. And when you say you're from Knoxville, the first thing people mention is the National Forensic Academy.
Yeah.
They mentioned the body farm. They mentioned the great work that's being done here to forward science in our profession. And so people know.
And I think that has something to do with the community supporting law enforcement.
Absolutely.
Because they recognize that people come here, officers, CSIs, come here from all over the globe to study and to learn, you know, to run your course. And you've also got a beautiful training academy. How does that compare?
Yeah. As you mentioned, Phil
Academy is
did
what it's
an
called,
amazing
right?
job. Yes. Our training academy, we've got an amazing facility out off of Rutledge Pike, and it is it's second to none. I mean, there are people from all over the country. There are officers, chiefs come in to see what we've got so they can try to model it in their communities. And the first thing they ask is, how did you get the money to pay for this? Well, it was the support of the community, quite frankly. I mean, that's where it comes from. It's community support that allows us to have the facilities that we have so that we can continue to have the best officers in the country. And, you know,
well, talk a little bit about this place, because I've had opportunity to go there twice, and I'm going to be going again this summer.
Sure.
I had a chance to, I guess it's a ride along on the wet pad and the course.
Our driving tack.
What is that called?
Yes. We have an emergency response course that we put our officers through on the driving track. And, you know, it helps us to find out, you know, where the weaknesses and the strengths are of our officers and trying to help them. As they're out here in the community, when we have to, you know, unfortunately, sometimes someone will run, and so you've got to be able to operate a vehicle.
I have been on amusement park rides that are less thrilling than going on that course and that wet pad.
The wet pad's interesting,
which is basically you hydroplane.
Right, it teaches you how to control the vehicle if you go into a skid, you know, and there's a lot of stuff inside that police car that really the weight of it shifts, and so you got to be able to know the science to it and correcting and. And making
so
sure
do officers
safe.
Take their regular patrol car that they drive every day on that course?
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. What we do that's where we get our driving in on the driving track. And it is it's a great resource for us to be able to get out there, to train our officers in how to properly operate a motor vehicle. You know, one of the things we talk about, the statistics, you know, we didn't mention is the statistics of officers killed in the line of duty. In 2011, 173 officers were killed in the line of duty. This year alone, so far, 34 or so officers have been killed.
And that could be in a vehicular accident.
It could be vehicular by suspect. Now, the thing that we have seen in the past, vehicular crashes were the number one cause. Unfortunately, last year, that changed. We are losing officers at the hand of suspects at a higher rate than we are in crashes.
Now, it's also possible that the crashes are going down because the officers are better trained.
Exactly.
Okay.
So we're going to control those areas that we can control.
Yeah.
And that's one of those, you know, it's about risk management.
Yeah.
And Frank, and so we look at where we can control the risk, and we control it with automobiles. And so we're going to control those risks. Now, the other area that we know we control is officer safety in terms of firearms use.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a great firearms range and just recently built a, what we call a 360 degree shoot house where we can do live fire.
It's amazing.
It is. And it allows us to go into a facility that looks just like a house and move through that area safely and be able to use live ammunition to engage suspects and those types of things, the targets. And but it really helps because that's where the shootings take place.
Yeah.
You know, so
and this let me try to describe this as a non-police officer.
Sure.
In civilian terms. You've got this, let's say, rectangular area with movable walls that you can reset so that it's a little bit different each time, and you can make it set to look like it could be a bedroom, a living room with closet space,
right,
and all this stuff. And then you've got these easels set up with drawings, and they either could be a drawing of a suspect pointing a gun at the officer, or they might be marked as innocent. Do not shoot this person.
Right.
So then the officers have to come barging through the door, throw down their little flashbang grenade to get attention and startle everybody and put everybody on the defensive. And that gives the officers an advantage, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. What happens is the purpose of a flashbang, the distraction device. The purpose of that is to distract.
It disorients, I think maybe even is a better word. Yeah.
It impacts
your sound.
Because
you can't concentrate through it.
Right. It impacts your ears. It impacts your eyes. And so then that gives us the advantage then of being able to immediately make contact and have the advantage so that we can be in control.
That one split second you need to determine, is this person a threat,
right,
or is this person a victim?
Right.
Yeah.
And that's the importance of it. And then the recognition, as you said, the targets may not be the same. So, one of the things, the difficulty in law enforcement, different than our military, and God bless what our military does. But the difference is when we go in, we have to understand that not everybody's a bad guy. And so when we go in and we're going in, we have to make sure that there's an actual threat before we use our force. And a little different. It's certainly different. Although, you know, again, a lot of our officers are veterans and they tell us that the culture has changed even in the military where they're starting to having to do more of that.
Yes,
than in the
because
past.
They're now the battlefield is
urban areas.
Is a regular city. We're talking with the Knoxville Police Chief David Rausch. The Knoxville Law Enforcement Memorial Run is coming up on May 12th. And we touched briefly on the number of fallen officers. But while we're still on this training exercise, this beautiful facility you have, the Phil Keith training facility here in Knoxville. You talked about this new area, which is a place where the officers go in and they actually are shooting live bullets into a wall at paper targets. But just across the way from that, there's also this huge video game that you guys where you look at a screen,
right,
and actors are portraying either a good guy or a bad guy, and you don't know how what's going to happen. And that's not a real gun. You're using a
right.
What is that then?
Well, it is
a simulated gun.
It's simulators, right?
Okay.
And it while it looks like a video game, it really isn't. It's
I'm teasing you when I say that because I had a chance to be in there. And
sure,
try it.
And it is. The great part of that simulator is it has some responses. I mean, it'll. Where it used to be in the past, all you had was the handgun to use. Now we can use all of our materials. And so
taser,
pepper spray. And so as you're interacting with this this video, what happens is it helps us determine on decision making on officers.
And it's tricky because the actor playing the bad guy might not be the bad guy. He might,
right,
you know, he might end up being the victim or the person or the other way around.
Right.
Someone who appears to be an innocent victim all of a sudden pulls a gun on you because they're crazy.
Right. And so that it really shows it helps us understand reaction time and the importance of being ready on everything and not knowing for sure what you're stepping into. So, you know, and you can, and the scenario changes. mean, you know, they can be branched out. An instructor is standing back at the table, and that instructor can make the person show his wallet or pull out a gun, mm-hmm. you know. And so, you know, you've got to be paying attention. And again, it shows us a lot about how reaction time works as well, you know, because we do react to a person's activity. We're not the aggressor.
Yeah,
in any of these. And so
this has been such an education for me
right.
to have the opportunity to go visit the KPD training facility.
It's a great facility.
It gave me such an increased appreciation for what you guys face, you know, the long blue arm of the law, or in your case, the short blue sleeves of the law. We're talking with Knoxville Chief, KPD Chief David Rausch, about policing here in our community. As a community leader, what does Knoxville, what does East Tennessee face? What kind of challenges do we face in the short term and maybe even a few more years down the road?
Yeah, I would tell you that the biggest issue we've got right now, Frank, is the issue that the epidemic that's going on throughout the country, and it's strong here in East Tennessee, and that's the illegal diversion of pain medications and
prescription
drugs. Yeah, it is absolutely epidemic, and it's impacting us in every manner you can possibly understand.
So this is worse than the meth situation.
It's worse than anything we've ever seen. It's you know, in the years that I've been in law enforcement,
that kind of stuff,
oxys, somas, opana, and
wow,
you know, everything. I mean, it's the gamut of all the schedules.
I saw a documentary, and I hope you've got a chance to see it too. It's about this band of criminals in West Virginia, and what they do is they border hop back and forth between West Virginia and Kentucky, getting the same prescription filled by multiple pharmacies, and then they'll take one for themselves and then sell the other one for the whatever the cost of the two would have been, so they end up breaking even or making a profit.
Making a lot more money, I guarantee.
And it's just mind-boggling the way their whole approach to life is so foreign to the way I was raised, and I think the way most Americans were raised. It requires a new method of combating.
It does, and it's a community issue. I mean, I'll tell you, Frank, one of the things I'll tell you is really to make you aware. You know, years ago we were worried about crack babies.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that. Well, the latest statistics, I've been dealing with the folks over at Children's Hospital and in the NICU unit. They are experiencing a major impact by this problem. In a one-day survey they did, 68% of the children in the NICU unit, and that's the special intensive care unit for children, 68% were addicted when they were born to pain medication. That is a horrible, horrible thing. And you know, we need to be screaming out loud about that. That's a problem. You know, we've seen the impact in our community. So our future is now being impacted, not only our current, but our future is being impacted by this scourge that's happening with this illegal diversion of these pain meds. And
get into identity theft here. You get into, I mean, there's so
everything.
Many related crimes.
Exactly. And theft is the number one crime we deal with in Knoxville. Theft is what pushes the numbers. You know, we have a few major crimes, you know, crimes against persons, but nowhere compared to what our theft numbers are.
Well, because if you're just a casual observer and you hear on the news that somebody broke in and stole copper from an ice-making facility,
sure.
Thinking, what are they going to do with that?
Yeah.
And it ultimately comes down to translating it into money for drugs.
Exactly. And more what everybody's really going to run into is, in the days past, you were able to leave things in your car. Let's say you left your laptop in the car while you ran in to get a cup of coffee. It's going to be gone if you do that nowadays. Somebody's going to come by, bust the window, take the laptop, and they're going to take, and they're either going to trade it with a
dealer. And because they're on pain meds, they don't feel the pain of breaking the glass.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm saying that facetiously, but I also mean it.
The reality is it's the problem. I mean,
yeah.
That's what we're dealing with.
That used to be a thing with meth heads where they were so strung out on meth that they would do things that a normal person would not do to get to the goods they're going to steal.
And that's what you're seeing very much with this pain problem.
Same thing?
Same thing. Oh. Exact same thing. And they get to the point where it's not the person, you know. And here's the real issue with this. I talked to a lot of community groups, Frank. Every group I talk to, I ask them, the very first thing I ask them when we're talking about what are the problems, the first question I ask every group is, I want everybody in the room to think about this. But if you're someone who has not been impacted personally, either a family member or someone you love that has not been impacted by this prescription drug issue, then raise your hand. I have yet to have a hand raised in a community group ever. Yet to have a hand raised. It impacts every family. Every one of us knows somebody who has been addicted and who is fighting this addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And every one of us knows somebody. And that's the level of the problem.
And yeah, sometimes it surfaces in the weirdest way. All of a sudden, somebody you know gets arrested, and you're like, what did he or she get? You're stunned, and then you look at the charges, and it's something like prescription fraud, and you're like, what? And if you don't break it down and think about what that means, then you realize that they are probably in tremendous pain from the addiction.
Right, right. And it's hitting everybody. And that's the point is we're seeing it's not like the old drugs. I mean, you know, the crack and the cocaine and even marijuana, there were cultures that dealt with that. This has no cultural barrier. And quite frankly, I think we've done it to ourselves.
Well, how do people get started on it? Is it from, you know, simple oral surgery and then they get hooked on it?
That's one way, Frank.
You know,
there's the oral surgeries, there's the legitimate back injuries, legitimate, you know, broken bones. All of it happens, or a lot of it, mm-hmm. of it happens legitimately, where you start taking the drug because it was prescribed to you to take care of it. Now, there are issues with some of that. You know, you go in, you get a root canal, and a doc gives you, 30 oxys. There's no need for 30. You only have 2 days of pain after a root canal. So, you know, treat the pain for 2 days. But here's the other side.
Before you know it, you've got somebody offering you an outrageous amount of money to buy your extra pills.
That's it. And then you like the feeling. You know, you get to this where, wow, this really makes me feel good. So you start taking it. And I'm not blaming the docs. I think the docs have some education as well. I think they need to learn. But, you know, the pressure's been put on them. You know, they've got pressure to treat pain. 10 years ago, we can trace this back. 10 years ago, the AMA put some standards in place in dealing with pain. And so they're getting pressure from their own organization on how to treat pain and mm-hmm. that they need to treat pain. And they're being evaluated on this. So
the doctors are being told to keep the patients out of pain by giving them these medicines.
And so, you know, and the truth is, you know, we were lied to by Big Pharma. You know, they told us that Oxy was not addictive. biggest lie that's ever been told. Mm-hmm. And we know that it is. And so there's some responsibility there as well. You know, and I wish the big pharmacies, mm-hmm. the pharmaceutical that make these things would step up to the plate and really step in and help where we need help. Right now, we need help in education. We need to educate people about prescription medicines. We need to educate them about the dangers. We need to educate our community about addiction. And then we need to work on the other end, and that's treatment. We need to provide more treatment. We need treatment to be better.
To get the people off the
addiction. To get them off the addictions. And so, you know, there is a huge area of work that needs to be done here. And we're working on it. I can tell you I'm working closely with the Metropolitan Drug Commission.
Yeah.
And we're working on a strategy.
And like you say, this cuts across all demographics.
It's everybody.
This could be a wealthy couple in West Knoxville or a poor couple, you know, downtown.
It's from A to Z, Frank. It's everybody. And we've seen it, we've seen it in our own community. We've seen that. Now I'm telling you about the babies, but we've also seen respectable people in our community who have fallen to this addiction and has impacted, you know, quite frankly, it's impacted the justice system.
Right. Well, I mean,
we're seeing it today.
You don't have to say Judge Bumgarner, but we know that that his issues with pain medication has now affected trials all throughout the past several years.
Exactly.
And you're going to have to deal with putting your manpower on some of these retrials for the murder cases that happened a couple of years back.
Having to revisit those cases and the trauma that's going to cause. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the, not only to the families, God bless them, you know, but the trauma that it's going to cause my officers who have to go through this. You know, if you don't think that these kind of things impact my folks, the officers, you know, they're human. And what they have to experience, and they have to go through this all over again. They have to testify to what they saw in these horrific scenes. And that has an impact. You know, and so, you know, so the reality, I mean, we take a look at this, it's A to Z. It's everybody's impacted, and it continues to have this horrible impact on our society. And so we've got to get the answers. We've got to figure it out. I know our legislature's working on it right now. They're mm-hmm. they're trying to do what they can to do some fixes, and we hope that they're going to continue to keep this up as a priority. I know the governor is doing that, and so we appreciate that.
You've met him.
I have met him.
Yeah.
and I know Bill is working really hard. He understands it. He gets it, and that's the important part.
Yes,
is he gets it. Our mayor gets it. You know, Madeline gets it. She has charged me with finding a solution, and I'm working hard.
Well, you did a great job today of educating our listeners, and we appreciate that. Knoxville Police Chief David Roush here talking about the culture here in East Tennessee and all the good and bad that comes with it. And also, we do want you to support the Knoxville Law Enforcement Memorial Run coming up on May 12th. It's a Saturday morning at Volunteer Landing. Show the officers who are working so hard to protect our community that you care about them by showing up and even walking or running and just participating and contributing to this great cause. KnoxLEMR.com is the website. Yeah. Chief Roush.
Thank you, Frank. I really appreciate you. I appreciate the opportunity to be here with you, and I appreciate our community. And we look forward to many more years of working hard to keep this a safe community, a great place that it is to live in East Tennessee, and come out and support us on the law enforcement run.
I'll be there. I'll see you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is the East Tennessee Report, a public affairs program of the Journal Broadcast Group. My name is Frank Murphy. We'll talk to you again next Sunday.